to be afraid of police.
There is just as much anger out here.
These police officers in riot gear trying to hold this position at Camden and Howard.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم واتقوا الذي أمدكم بما تعلمون
And fear he who provided you with that which you know.
أمدكم بأنعام وبنين
Provided you with grazing livestock and children.
وَجَنَّاتٍ وَعُيُونَ
And gardens and springs.
إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ عَذَابَ يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ
Indeed, I fear for you the punishment of a terrible day.
Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, we were discussing these verses of chapter Shu'ara. The 132nd one up to 135th. وَاتَّقُوا الَّذِي أَمَدَّكُمْ بِمَا تَعْلَمُونَ Be in awe of him who has succored you with what you know. أَمَدَّكُمْ بِأَنْعَامٍ وَبَنِينَ He has succored you with cattle and children. وَجَنَّاتٍ وَعُيُونَ Gardens, spring. إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ عَذَابَ يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ Verily, I fear for you the chastisement of a great day. These verses altogether make the third part of the statement of Hud to the people. This section of the chapter, the section that talks about Prophet Hud exhorting his people to guard themselves against evil, started with the invitation of Prophet to piety. إِذْ قَالَ لَهُمْ أَخُوهُمْ هُود أَلَا تَتَّقُونَ When their brother Hud said to them, Will you not fear Allah? He started by saying that I do not ask any recompense for it. My recompense is only from the Lord of the world. إِنْ أَجْرِيَ إِلَّا عَلَىٰ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ He said. Then he moved on, referring to their faults and their wrong deeds. أَتَبْنُونَ بِكُلِّ رِيعٍ آيَةً تَعْبَثُونَ وَتَتَّخِذُونَ مَصَانِعَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَخْلُدُونَ وَإِذَا بَطَشْتُمْ بَطَشْتُمْ جَبَّارِينَ فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهِ At the end, it said. So they had so many wrongdoings that the Prophet mentioned to them. And now the Prophet somehow tries to stimulate the sense of being thankful of Almighty Allah in them. Happily, they may return toward Allah. So at first he says, be in awe of him who has succored you with what you know. Everybody returns to himself. What am I being given by the Almighty Allah? Then he goes on and says, أَمَدَّكُمْ بِأَنْعَامٍ وَبَنِينَ. Do you not know that these cattles, these baneen and children you are given are the blessings of the Almighty Allah? وَجَنَّاتٍ وَعَيُونَ. Do you forget all these gardens and springs you are given? Don't you recognize that you do not have any deficiency or inconvenience in your lives? How can you forget the bestower of all these bounties? Then he states the last page of his words and somehow threatens and warns them with the divine retribution when he says, إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ عَذَابَ يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ. Verily, I fear for you the chastisement of a great day. It will be a day when you will see by your own eyes the consequence of all those cruelties, all those injustice, pride, arrogance, and worshipping low desires, sexuality, and alienation with Allah. I fear for you. إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ, the Prophet says.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So the Prophet says, somehow threatening them, warning them with the divine retribution, إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ عَذَابَ يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ. I fear for you the chastisement of a great day. The Quranic phrase, يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ, a great day, is usually applied for the hereafter day, which is great from any dimension, but it has sometimes been used in the verses of the Holy Quran for the harsh and terrible days that some nations had, as the story of Shu'aib mentioned in this very surah. We are informed that Allah punished the people of Shu'aib with that lightning that emerged from the piece of cloud, after they showed obstinacy for accepting the truth. And that day was a great day, يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ. It says, verily, it was a chastisement of a grievous day. So the phrase يَوْمٍ عَظِيمٍ mentioned in this verse may refer to the day when the arrogant ones of the Ad people encountered the painful punishment of instructive wind. The evidence of this meaning is the statement of their retribution in a few verses later that we will, God willing, mention. It may also refer to the retribution of hereafter day, or to both of these chastisements, whose day is very great. At the end, Let us have a look at one tradition from the Messenger of Almighty Allah that says, "He who tortures people in the world severely will have the worst punishment among people with Allah on the hereafter day." Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very important question. And that question is about a very sensitive topic. That topic is about taqlid and imitation of a mujtahid and an expert in matters of faith. Taqlid is not only a topic which normal people object to. So, you know, taklit is not only a subject which was a point of contention amongst people, normal people. It is also something which a group of scholars, right, in the history of tashayyu and Islam have called into question. Right? You know, in the history of Islamic jurisprudence and Islamic thought and Shiite thought, there was a group of scholars, right, who were known as the Akhbaris, right, the Akhbaris. And, you know, these people, they called into question the legitimacy of, actually ijtihad itself, right? And that, you know, that a human being could go and exercise his power of reason and come to a conclusion regarding matters of faith. And then, you know, people should follow him, right? So this is a subject which, you know, a lot of people, normal people call into question, but also, even a group of scholars called it into question, right? And of course, we want with the reservation that this is a subject that should be examined in a scholarly way in its own proper place, in the Sulli discussions. But if we want to give a very a cursory answer, we can say that we have numerous hadiths, right, regarding the necessity of following a religious expert. Like, for example, we have one hadith, a very famous hadith, which has been passed down to us. So we have numerous hadiths, right? One of which is the following hadith. We have a hadith in which the imam says that if there is a faqih, if there is a jurisprudent who protects his soul from sin, protects his religion, follows his master, right, and goes against his desires, right, the people, the normal people, the common people, they should follow him in matters of faith. Right? This clearly is very clear and apparently legitimizes, right, the exercise of ijtihad and also the permissibility of people following a mujtahid in matters of faith. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the legitimacy of taqlid. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
Nine out of 10 children in the Gaza Strip suffer some form of conflict-related trauma because of the Zionist regime's violence and attacks against the tiny enclave. Experts say children with autism, who are often highly sensitive to external stimuli, are particularly susceptible to the enduring impacts of war and conflict, which could potentially make diagnosis difficult. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of the Electronic Intifada wrote, when Auni Abu Hatab was a toddler, he preferred to play alone. His mother, Nujud, 28, noticed that his movements were jittery and excessive and that he was unable to make eye contact. She grew concerned and took him to several doctors and hospitals in Gaza. At first, I thought that he could not hear, Nujud said, adding, I went to doctors and they confirmed that there was no problem with hearing. Others said that the problem was psychological. Auni, now 8, has since been diagnosed with autism. Nujud said, we discovered this after years of effort. The National Institute of Mental Health defines autism spectrum disorder as a neurological and developmental disorder that affects how people interact with others, communicate, learn, and behave. Maura Atla, a special education specialist at the Society for the Care of Handicapped in Gaza, which was founded in 1975 and offers services to children with autism, said that children with autism often face misdiagnosis. Many doctors, she said, interpret cases of shock and delay in the use of personal skills in children as disability. Furthermore, children in Gaza already suffer from high instances of trauma as a result of Israeli regime violence, and children with autism, who are often highly sensitive to external stimuli, are particularly susceptible to the enduring impacts of war and conflict, which could potentially make diagnosis difficult. Before Auni's diagnosis, Nujud left doctor's offices feeling confused and frustrated. And while it was a relief for Nujud to understand more about her son's condition, life is not necessarily easier for their family post-diagnosis. At the family's home in Gaza's Beach refugee camp, Auni prefers to be near his mother. He likes to draw, but he doesn't like loud noises and the dark. Nujud said his brothers are young and they cannot bear his constant screaming and his nervousness. He hits everything on the ground, his movement is very fast, and we cannot control him. Nujud has discovered that the resources for parents of autistic children in Gaza are extremely limited. She said, there are no institutions to take care of him, no hospitals, not even specialists who provide sessions for free. The Abu Hatab family struggles financially as many do in Gaza due to the Zionist regime's 15-year blockade. Auni's father works as a laborer and they share their home with three of his sisters. Recently, though, Nujud heard about Gaza Society for the Care of the Handicapped and let them know Auni was in need of services. He was then enrolled in the society's Shams School, where he attends classes headed by specialists who understand developmental differences in individuals with autism. Nujud is hopeful that the school will be a good place for him, but like other parents in Gaza, she understands that until the family's financial circumstances improve, providing resources to their autistic child will be a struggle. Wafa Atale, 26, first understood that her daughter, Rawan, was different when she turned 2 years old. We started to notice that she was not responding to her name and that she avoided eye contact, she said, adding, at first, I thought that she only needed time. Just like Auni's mother, Nujud, Wafa took Rawan to many doctors, all of whom did not offer a hopeful prognosis. Rawan, now 6, was eventually diagnosed with autism. Wafa said, I wish we knew earlier that she was autistic. Maybe her condition would have been better. The family lives in Al Zaytun neighborhood south of Gaza City and lives off of Rawan's father's income as a baker. they pay $117 a month for Rawan to attend classes at Basmat Amal in Gaza, though they are unsure if they can continue to pay that long term. Basmat Amal, like Shams School, provides classes and developmental support tailored to individuals with autism. Wafa is grateful to be able to afford the classes, but she acknowledges that the consequences of not having professional support to help with Rawan's development is a daunting prospect. Rawan's behavior can be trying for Wafa, as Rawan often screams loudly and finds it difficult to be still for long. Rawan's mother says, "Sometimes I lose control over her and I end up crying. I always say that if there was no Israeli blockade and if our financial situation were good, I would travel with her to receive better treatment and deal with experts who could provide me with the best techniques to deal with her." Ahmad Al-Nawati, 22, also attends the Shams School. He said, "I enjoy being a student at Shams School. My teacher is lovely and caring. I got to know new friends there." Ahmad's developmental age is 8 years old, and he is progressing along a third-grade curriculum, learning math and strengthening his reading skills. His diagnosis of autism came later in life, said his mother, Naima, 55. When he was born, there were no services offered to children with autism, she said. How would I know? In that time, there was not enough knowledge about it. Naima said Ahmad's speech was delayed and that he found it hard to socialize with others. She said, "I was totally unaware of what was happening to him. I clung to the hope that he would get better with time." Dr. Hamouda Al-Dohar, the head of Nabil Child Care Center in Gaza, which provides services for children with autism, said, "I believe that we are in dire need of conducting awareness sessions for all community members, parents, youths, and mothers in Gaza. We need to involve everyone, especially parents, in treatment plans." He believes that greater awareness of autism in Gaza would also help reduce the stigma that some parents say is a problem. Yet certainly, one of the biggest stresses on autistic individuals is the Zionist regime's repeated wars on the Gaza Strip. Naima said that during the Zionist regime's wars on Gaza, Ahmad had found it hard to cope. He said, "I hate the loud sounds by Israel, and I can't stand the dark at all." The wars perpetrated by the Zionist regime have worsened his condition, according to Naima. He gets panic attacks, trembles, and screams nonstop when he hears explosions nearby, she said. He experienced depression for a long time. Now, when he hears loud music from wedding parties or any loud sound, even the sound of a car door opening, he gets close to me and holds my hand tightly. I hug him to reassure him that we are fine. Meanwhile, Tasnim News Agency noted, Hamas reminded the world of its responsibilities to criminalize the Israeli regime violations against Palestinians and hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. The Palestinian Resistance Movement has recently made the remark in a statement while marking the Human Rights Day on December 10th, which was adopted by the United Nations in 1948. The resistance movement said the world is marking this day as the Zionist regime continues to escalate its terror and systematic violations against Palestinians, including deliberate killings, land theft, siege, and racial discrimination and segregation. It went on to say that the day provides a good opportunity to shed light on the scale and gravity of the unabated Israeli regime crimes against Palestinians. It is also a suitable opportunity to remind the whole world of its responsibilities to take actual action to criminalize the Israeli regime occupation violations and colonial settlers' terrorism, work on putting an end to them, and prosecute their perpetrators as war criminals at international courts, Hamas added. The movement further stressed that Israeli regime crimes constitute a flagrant violation of the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international law, reaffirming its commitment to the legitimate Palestinian rights.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Assalamu Alaikum wa rahmatullah. When we talk about justice, we realize that in the Shia theology, it has been such an important concept that if you look at the history of Muslim theology, the Shia theology is known as Adliya. One of the ways they are described is that this is the school which emphasizes the concept of Adl, especially when we talk about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and then coming down to the level of the Anbiya, Mursaleen, A'imma, and even when it comes to the, you know, normal human beings. But the challenge is always to understand what is justice, what is adl. These days, the idea of adl is that everybody is equal. And equality is many times taken in the meaning of similarity. And this is where we have to realize that the Islamic understanding of adl, you know, is not equal to similarity and to be same. Actually, the way adl is defined among the Muslims is وَضْعُ الشَّيْءِ فِي مَحَلِّهِ. When you put things in their rightful place or in the proper order, this is adl. And when you put things in wrong places or in wrong order, that is dhulm. When you put your forehead in worship of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that is adl. When you put your forehead to worship an idol, that is zulm. And therefore you will see in Quran, the word shirk and zulm is used many times in the same meaning. And this is where, you know, even in our human activities, you might have a vehicle very similar to the ambulance. You know, both are driving in the same direction, and then there is a stop sign. The ambulance with its light and siren will go through. And you will say, but I'm just like him. For him to go through the red light is adl. For you to go through the red light would be dhulm. So it's adl doesn't mean to be same. And this is one of the problems that we have in the Western thinking. Unfortunately, many Muslims also, even among the scholars, are being inflicted with that idea. And they look at Shari'i laws and they say, oh, this is zulm. And they're looking for Islam which is more just. As if, you know, the Islam of Rasulullah, the Islam of the A'imma, and the Islam of Quran is not based on adl and justice. Let me, you know, narrate to you a very beautiful story. I'm sure you heard it before, that adl does not always mean to be same. There was two individuals traveling. They sat down in the rest area for having their meal. You know, one of them took out 5 loaves of bread and the other had 3. So in total they had, you know, 8 pieces. There was another traveler passing by. They welcomed him. Bismillah, join us. So he came down and had the meal with them. So in total, they had 5 and 3, 8, you know, loaves of bread there. You know, 3 people ate. Now, this traveler who was invited by these two fellows decided out of his own, you know, sense of generosity that, well, they invited me. I was their guest, but I would like to pay them. And so he took out, you know, 8 dirham and left it there. And he went away. Now these two travelers started arguing, how do we divide this 8 dirham? The one who had 3 loaves of bread, he said, we should divide it half and half. We are 2 people. So 8 dirham, you take 4, I take 4. The other fellow was saying, no, I had 5, you know, loaves of bread and you had 3. So I will take 5 dirham, you take 3 dirham. The fellow who was being proposed to take 3, he said, no. They took their case whenever they reached to the city, whether it was Kufa or somewhere else, to Ali. Amir al-Mu'mineen heard and he said to this other fellow, he can, why don't you compromise and accept what you've, you know, your companion is saying. But he says, no, Ali, I want adl. I want justice. Because in the Western way, thus justice means we divide half and half. Same. 4 and 4. And he says, really, you want justice? He said, yes. And so be careful before you insist on justice. Ali said, well, you will get 1 dirham, he will get 7 dirhams. So he said, but how can you decide in this way? They said, think about it. In total, there were 8 loaves of bread. 3 of you were eating. So you divide 8 into 3, you have 24 portions. Each one of you ate equal. So the first person ate 8 shares. You divide his, you know, 5 into 15. So from 15, he ate 8. And you ate 8 from your 9 shares. So you only were left with 1 which went to the guest. And the other fellow got, you know, 7 portions remaining which went to the guest. So he will get 7 dirhams and you will get only 1 dirham. So remember, when we talk about justice, you know, this is something you have to keep in mind. That is why, especially when we talk about our relationship to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Yes, Allah is adil. Our theology is known as adliya. But never ever try to make a deal with Allah on the basis of justice. You will be the biggest of the losers there. You know, if you look at the dua of Yawmi Arafah of Imam Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. What Imam says, and this is the lesson he's giving us, wa annaka al-adl al-hakam al-adl alladhi la tajur. Wallah, you are the just ruler who is never unfair to anyone. Wa adluka muhliki. Your adl for me will be a matter of, you know, loss, and it will destroy me. وَمِن كُلِّ عَدْلِكَ مَحْرَبِي. And I run away from, you know, your justice. When we deal with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we always have to ask for His fadl and His rahmah, His grace and forgiveness. You know, the famous statement in the du'as that we have, اللَّهُمَّ عَامِلْنَا بِفَضْلِكَ وَلَا تُعَامِلْنَا بِعَدْلِك. O Allah, deal with us on the basis of your grace, your mercy and forgiveness, not on the basis of your justice, because that is where we will be the losers there. And this is where we have to realize that when we talk about justice, let us try to understand what is the reality of, you know, and the meaning of justice from the Islamic perspective, especially in our interaction with Allah when we talk to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Kalavas Lampage. Very welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Shaykh Rouhani are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom for today's discussion. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about a part of history in which Reza Khan, the then king of Iran, tried to unveil the women, in fact, to remove the Islamic hijab from the body and the, we can say, the head of the women, the scarves of the women, unveil them, and somehow bring a kind of new westernized lifestyle into Iran on that time. Was he successful or not? Said Mohsen, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, obviously, he was definitely unsuccessful. And the reason is that when we look at the psychology of a society, mm-hmm. or when we want to know about a society, every society has some beliefs.
Yes.
And especially when we talk about the Iranian society, if you look at the Iranian society, we see that the Iran from last 5,000 years, you know, the people of Iran is living in the same area. They're not from the immigrants. They did not migrate to have the rulership. Whereas, for example, you know, the Turkish, they were somehow moved to the different places. They migrated in order to have, you know, their, we can say, like, rulership and all those. But when we look at the Iranian history from, like, Hakamanashi, like they say, like that time onwards.
Comedians.
From that time onwards, we see that the Iran has its own emperorship. Mm-hmm. And obviously it has its own traditions, which is rooted into the Iranian nation, we can say. Like hijab, when we talk about the hijab, yes, one of the perspective of hijab is the Islamic view of that.
Yes.
But even before Islam, they had a proper clothing.
Yes.
You know, it's in the tradition. Like if you talk about, if you talk to the people who are living in different, like far places in Iran, when you talk about the culture, culturally, they were having the veil.
Yes.
It was culturally rooted.
Yes.
So what Reza Khan was trying to do with the backup of France, basically, what they wanted to do is they wanted to change the mentality of people. Mm-hmm. They wanted to force people to unveil themselves, especially the women, so that they can have this Western secular culture within the Iranian culture.
A lifestyle,
The lifestyle.
Yes.
Whereas the Iranian people are full of Iranian culture. Yes. And it's impossible for anyone to do
so
that.
So you want to say that beside Islamic culture, Iranians there have chastity, okay? Even
chastity and all these things are rooted in the Iranian nation.
It is very much interesting that even Salman al-Muhammadi, Salman al-Farsi, has told Prophet Muhammad about the way of the clothing and dress code of the Persians. And it had direct role on the hijab of the women of Arab Peninsula on that time, okay? Yes. The women that were living on that time. Even in the stones and in the documents that exist today from the pictures of the old Persia, you could see that the women are covered from top to toe. And this is really fascinating. But because of a trip of Reza Khan to the Turkey and seeing Ataturk, you know, changing all the lifestyle of the people, he has decided to change the lifestyle. Unfortunately, Qiyam-e Goharshad, the massacre of Goharshad took place, and the other cases. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. How do you look at the Reza Khan's efforts to unveil the women, and he was not successful?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, of course, as our respected guest says, that he was not successful, definitely. You know, there are many reasons that why Reza Khan was not successful in this regard. First of all, we should understand that hijab or observing hijab is an Islamic rule or ruling that it has its, let's say, roots in a very, let's say, ancient or historical kind of tradition and culture, and a kind of social values that we've had throughout the history in this area, in this region. So it has its own, let's say, strong and powerful principles based on which the Islamic laws and Islamic legal system and rulings are based by these scholars. This is the first point.
Yes.
It is not something that could be changed during, for example, one day or in one night. It's impossible. Yes. The other point is that, unfortunately, at that time, the King Reza Khan and Ataturk and Amanullah Khan and the three countries, Islamic countries like Afghanistan, Iran, and Turkey, they were actually supported by these modern or, let's say, secular kind of regimes in Europe,
yes,
they wanted to forcefully change the culture and the traditions, yes, of the society, Islamic society. It is completely wrong to dictate the people how they live, how, for example, they, let's say, take their lifestyle. It is totally wrong because other kings, other, let's say, invaders, attackers in the history, they were not also successful in this regard. So that's why when you dictate the people from outside,
yes,
how to observe, for example, your lifestyle,
yes,
that is totally wrong. It will, yes, never succeed, not only in Iran and any other areas as well. So that's why it was a mistake, because at that time it is said that once one of the Maharaja at that time,
yes,
issued a fatwa against tobacco. That's very much,
yes, yes,
famous.
Yes, yes, Mirza Shirazi. Tobacco movement, yes.
Yeah, of course.
Ban of tobacco.
Yes. You see that the women and the daughters and the family members of, yes, Reza Khan followed this fatwa.
Yes.
And let's say accepted this fatwa and they followed the Maraji Taqlids. You see that it was Maraji.
Okay.
Who ruled,
of course, that was for the time of Nasiruddin Shah.
Oh, Qajar. Sorry, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Nasiruddin Shah, yeah.
Yes.
So
before Reza Khan.
Before Pahlavi. Okay, okay. Yeah.
Pahlavi's.
That's why we see that even at the time of Reza Khan, it,
yes,
was the Maraji.
Yes.
Like
Ayatollah Burujerdi, Ayatollah Khansari, Ayatollah Sayyid Hussein Qomi, as known as Agha Tabatabai, Sayyid Abu Qasim Kashani. And that's why when Muhammad Reza, the son of Reza Khan, comes to the power, he abrogates Qanune, because unveiling the women, okay?
Yeah.
The law, because of the presence of Maraji.
Yeah, this was, it was Maraji, it was ulama and scholars who governed the people actually in reality, not the kings, not the, let's say, the presidents at that time.
That's
and the other point is that nowadays you see in Turkey, the people wanted to make hijab as something legal.
Mm-hmm.
There are a group of people in Turkey. While the case was vice versa in Turkey, because Ataturk actually tried to unveil hijab to leave aside these kind of Islamic rulings. But nowadays, after these many decades, now the women, now the people of Turkey came to this conclusion that no, that was the correct way, the true way to observe hijab. I mean that this observing hijab is something coincide with the nature of the women. Yeah.
Of the women.
As you rightly mentioned, chastity, dignity or something that every woman wants that. And that is why when you help and support women to be more dignified, that's why they will welcome it, of course, if they would understand correctly and truly that hijab is something for the benefit of them, not the others. It's a kind of the way of protection, way of saving guard them against the strangers, against the bad people, not to be misused or abused. This is the way that the Muslim women observe hijab. This is the reason, actually.
There is also another famous figure, Ayatollah Muhammad Taghi Bafqi Yazdi, who Reza Khan came into the holy shrine of Lady Fatima al-Mahziba with his women without hijab. And that's why that Ayatollah Bafqi, raised his voice, and he was sent into prison and exile. Even he was, beaten hard by Reza Khan. That why do you say this is the holiest place in the world? How do you dare to enter the women into this place without hijab, you yourself?
Yeah.
And the strong position of the, as you said, Maharaja on that time, and even the women, because there were so many women on that time with hijab, so they stopped sending their girls to the schools. The schools were shut down because of this. And so many public, the ordinary people, has also raised against this position. Okay, Sayyid, your final remarks.
Well, obviously, there is a philosophy behind this, why these things has not happened. And it cannot happen in any country.
Okay.
I'm not just talking about the hijab right now.
Yes.
I'm talking about the roots of something when a change comes. For example, nowadays we're talking about the Islamic banking. Some of the people or economists, they're thinking of applying Islamic banking into the Western countries,
yes,
for example, or maybe the Western banking system into the Islamic countries. This is not possible. Why? Because, for example, if you are talking about the Islamic banking, it can only be applied in the Islamic society.
Yes.
And not in non-Islamic society. Similarly, the Western banking system that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Why today in the Muslim countries people are talking against it? why people are talking about no interest, you know, banking system. Yes. It's because they are living in a Muslim society where the system, banking system, is non-Muslim.
Yes.
So anything which is not in line with the teachings of their religion in a society, it cannot be applied in any case.
Yes.
Either it's about the veiling. You know, if you want to unveil the woman in any country,
yes,
for example, Iran, Pakistan, or anything, you
yes.
need to make them non-Muslim first. If they leave their religion, yes, they will unveil themselves.
Okay, then they are not allowed to leave.
That's the case. Similarly, yes. if we want the Western people, like an atheist,
yes.
living in America, in Europe, I yes. don't know, Christian or Jewish, wearing the veil or hijab, if they don't have that in their teachings, if they don't have that in their religion, they will never follow you.
Yes.
Either if you say, like, these are the benefits and you look more prettier, I don't know, it's the
yes.
modesty and all those.
Okay.
You bring all these reasons.
Yes.
Because this is not something which is in their society. It's not in their beliefs. That's why you cannot, even with the politeness or force, by
yes.
forcing them, you can make okay. them to have the hijab. So one of the main reasons of Raza Khan and the today's, you know, this woman, I don't know, freedom and the things that are going on in Iran.
I think the main
right
slogan
now.
Is, that's right, Zan Zendegi Azadi,
yeah.
the woman, we can say life
and
freedom.
Freedom.
Yes.
Freedom.
Okay.
Why, like, they say, like, there's a force veiling, the force of, you know, having hijab. Why this movement is failing in Iran, like, they want to unveil everyone, they're burning their scarves. It's because the people of Iran are the Muslims, and especially Shia Muslims, who follow Hazrat Fatima Zahra salam alayha, who
yes.
follow the Hazrat Zainab salam alayha, Lady Zainab.
Yes.
So such people will never listen to you. Even if you say, like, in media, whatever, you talk about this. Why? Because people are, the roots of the people are in Islam.
Yes.
They're rooted, the beliefs in Islam. And the most important thing is that this area, in its culture, these things are rooted. You cannot take culture of someone away. So that's
the religious culture.
Yes.
That's right. Sometimes I think sometimes the people want to be more Catholic than Pope himself.
Yeah.
you know,
yeah,
you want to be looked like a Western woman, you know, in the Western country, regardless of the fact that even in the Western world, if you look at it, for example, 50 years ago, the chastity and the dress code
yes.
and the coverings were more and more.
Yeah,
and this is really a problem of the 21st century, that how the people are invited and encouraged to be nude, to be naked.
Yeah,
and nudity, according to the official statistics in the Western world, is the main cause for sexual assault, sexual abuse, underage raping, underage
yeah.
sexual activities, unwanted pregnancy, abortion, and all of that. Okay? These are all the problems that are mainly rooted in
yeah,
nudity and sex appeal that is unfortunately advertised by the Western powers. And Sheikh, your final remarks, sorry.
Yeah, the very reason by which Imam Khomeini succeeded,
yes.
that is the reason that why Reza Khan did not succeed.
Uh-huh.
You know, because the women of Iran supported Imam Khomeini,
yes.
rahmatullahi alayhi.
Yes, yes.
And this was the reason
yes.
that tells us that Imam Khomeini's idea,
yes.
slogans, let's say beliefs, were totally and comprehensively in line with the hearts of Iranian women.
Yes.
That's why they supported Imam Khomeini and they did not support Reza Khan.
Yes.
This was the reason that Reza Khan did not succeed.
Yes. So many of the religious communities on that time did not went to the movies because nude pictures were shown on the movies, you know, and the women were not satisfied exactly by what they had as a woman in their status. You know, the status of the woman was degraded, and because of imitating the Western lifestyle, the Iranian woman, who was respected because of her hijab, because of her covering the body, was now changed into a sex tool for the men and a tool of enjoyment. And we can say, as you said, the late Imam Khomeini stopped all of this. Okay, that's right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, Sayyid Mohsen, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of why Reza Khan was not successful in unveiling the women of Iran. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me, and I try to remember not to take anything for granted.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please don't forget to log on to our